268. The dispute with the Pharisees and the arrival of Jesus' mother and brothers. 2 September 1945. The scene is the same as in the last vision. Jesus is taking leave of the widow, holding little Joseph by the hand, and he says to the woman,
"Nobody will come before I come back unless they are Gentiles. But keep here until the day after tomorrow whoever should come, saying that I shall definitely be here."
"I will, Master. And if there are any sick people, I will give them hospitality as you taught me."
"Goodbye, then, and peace be with you. Come, Manon."
From this brief conversation I understand that sick and unhappy people in general have come to the Master at Chorazim, and that Jesus has been evangelizing, not only working, but also through miracles. And if Chorazim is still indifferent, it really means that it is a wild, untillable soil. And yet Jesus walks through it, exchanging greetings with those who greet him, as if nothing were the matter, and then resuming his conversation with Manon, who is uncertain whether he should leave again for Macharis, or remain another week. In the meantime, in the house at Capernaum they are preparing for the Sabbath. Matthew, still limping a little, welcomes his companions, offers them water and fresh fruit, inquiring about their mission. Peter turns up his nose, seeing that some Pharisees are already sauntering near the house.
"They want to poison our Sabbath. I almost feel like going to meet the Master to tell them to go to Bethsaida and thus frustrate their plans."
"And do you think that the Master would do it?" asks his brother.
"Then there is that poor wretch waiting for him in the room on the ground floor,"
remarks Matthew.
"We could take him to Bethsaida by boat, and I, or someone else, could go and meet the Master,"
says Peter.
"It's not a bad idea," says Philip, who would willingly go to Bethsaida where is his family.
"All the more that, take note, their guardianship has been reinforced with scribes. Let us go immediately. You will take the sick man, go through the kitchen garden and away through the back of the house. I will take the boat to the fig well, and James will do likewise. Simon Zealot and Jesus' brothers will go to meet the Master."
"I am not going away with the possessed man,"
proclaims the Iscariot.
"Why not? Are you afraid the demon might cling to you?"
"Don't bother me, Simon of Jonah. I said that I am not going and I will not go."
"Go with the cousins to meet Jesus."
"No."
"Ugh. Come by boat."
"No."
"Well, what is it you want? You are always a hindrance."
"I want to stay here, where I am. I am not afraid of anybody, and I am not running away. In any case, the Master would not be happy with the trick. And there would be another sermon reproaching us, and I have no intention of getting it through your fault. You may go. I will stay here to report."
"Definitely no. Either everybody, or nobody,"
shouts Peter.
"And nobody, because the Master is here. Here he is coming,"
says the Zealot seriously, looking down the road. Peter, who is obviously dissatisfied, grumbles into his beard. But he goes to meet Jesus with the others. After greeting him, they inform him of a blind and dumb man possessed, who has been waiting for several hours with his relatives for him. Matthew explains,
"He is like an inert body. He threw himself on some empty sacks, and has not moved since. His relatives hope in you. Come and refresh yourself and you will assist him later."
"No. I am going to him at once. Where is he?"
"In the room on the ground floor, near the oven. I put him in there with his relatives, because there are many Pharisees and scribes, who seem to be lying in wait."
"Yes, and it would be better not to make them happy,"
grumbles Peter.
"Is Judas of Simon not here?"
asks Jesus.
"He stayed in the house. He must do the opposite of what others do,"
grumbles Peter again. Jesus looks at him, but does not reproach him. He goes quickly towards the house, entrusting the boy just to Peter, who caresses him, taking out at once from his white sash a whistle, saying,
"One for you and one for my son. I will take you to see him tomorrow evening. I got a shepherd to make them for me after I had spoken to him of Jesus."
Jesus enters the house. He greets Judas, who seems to be busy sorting out the kitchenware, and he then goes straight to a kind of low dark storeroom beside the oven.
"Get the sick man to come out,"
orders Jesus. A Pharisee, who is not from Capernaum, but whose standoffishness is even worse than that of the local Pharisees, says,
"He is not sick, he is possessed.
That is still a disease of the spirit.
But his eyes and tongue are bound."
"It is always a disease of the spirit that expands to limbs and organs. If you had allowed me to finish, you would have realized that that is what I wanted to say. Fever is in the blood when one is ill, but after the blood, it attacks this or that part of the body.
The Pharisee does not know what to retort and becomes silent. The possessed man has been led before Jesus. He is motionless. Matthew was quite right. He is greatly impeded by the demon. People are gathering in the meantime. It is incredible how, particularly during the hours that I would call of relaxation, people were so quick in gathering where there was something to be seen. The notables of Capernaum are now there, and among them there are four Pharisees. Jairus is also there, and, in the corner, with the excuse of supervising order, there is the Roman centurion, and citizens from other towns are with him.
In the name of God, depart from the eyes and the tongue of this man. I want it. Set him free. You are no longer permitted to have him. Go away,
shouts Jesus, stretching out his hands while giving the order. The miracle begins with a howl of rage from the demon, and ends with a cry of joy of the cured man who shouts,
Son of David! Son of David! Holy and King!
How can this man know that it was he who cured him?
Asks a scribe.
It's all a farce. These people are paid to do that,
says a Pharisee, shrugging his shoulders. By whom? If you do not mind me asking you, asks Jairus.
By you, too.
And for what purpose?
To make Capernaum famous.
Do not mortify your intelligence by talking nonsense and your tongue by making it foul with lies. You know that it is not true, and you ought to realize that you are talking nonsense. What has happened here has happened in many parts of Israel. So there must be someone paying everywhere? I did not really know that the common people in Israel were very rich. Because you, and with you all the mighty ones, do not certainly pay for that. So it is the common people who pay, being the only ones who love the Master.
You are the head of the synagogue, and you love him. There is Manning. At Bethany there is Lazarus of Theophilus. They are not common people.
But they are honest, and I am honest too. And we do not cheat anybody, in no way. Much less in matters of faith. We do not take the liberty of doing that, because we fear God and we have understood what is pleasant to God. Honesty. The Pharisees turn their back to Jairus and they attack the relatives of the cured man.
Who told you to come here?
Who? Many people who had already been cured, or their relatives.
But what did they give you?
Give? The assurance that he would cure him.
Was he really ill?
Oh, sly minds. Do you think that all this is feigned? If you do not believe it, go to Gadara and inquire about the misfortune of the family of Anna of Ismael.
The irritated people of Capernaum are in tumult, while some Galileans, who have come from near Nazareth, say,
And yet he is the son of Joseph, the carpenter.
The citizens of Capernaum, being faithful to Jesus, shout,
No, he is what he said, and what the cured man has just said. Son of God and son of David.
Do not increase the excitement of the population with your statements,
says a scribe contemptuously.
And what is he, then, according to you?
A Beelzebub.
Ugh! Tongues of vipers! Blasphemers! You are possessed! Heartless men! You are our ruin! Do you want to deprive us also of the joy of the Messiah? Usurers! Arid stones!
A real uproar. Jesus, who had gone into the kitchen to drink some water, appears on the threshold in time to hear once again the stale, stupid accusation of the Pharisees.
He is a Beelzebub, because demons obey him. The great Beelzebub, who is his father, helps him and he drives out demons only through the assistance of Beelzebub, the prince of demons.
Jesus descends the two little steps of the threshold and comes forward. He stops erect, severe and calm in front of the group of scribes and Pharisees, and staring at them with keen eyes he says to them,
Also on the earth we see that a kingdom divided into opposed parties becomes weak internally and can be easily attacked and laid waste by nearby countries that make it their slave. Also on the earth we see that a town divided into conflicting parts does not flourish, and the same applies to a family, the members of which are divided by mutual hatred. It falls to pieces, and becomes a useless nibble, which is of no use to anybody, and the laughingstock of fellow citizens. Harmony is shrewdness besides being necessary. Because it keeps people independent, strong and loving. Patriots, citizens, relatives ought to ponder on that, when for the caprice of an individual advantage they are tempted to have separations or commit abuses, which are always dangerous, because they are alternative in parties and they destroy love. And such shrewdness is practiced by those who are the masters of the world. Consider Rome and its undeniable power, so painful to us. Rome rules the world. But they are united by one mind and one will. To rule, even amongst them there must be differences, aversions, rebellions. But they lie at the bottom. On the surface they are one block, without cracks or perturbations. They all want the same thing and they are successful because of that. And they will be successful, as long as they want the same thing. Consider that example of human cohesive shrewdness and say, if the children of this world are like that, what will Satan be like? The Romans are demons, as far as we are concerned. But their heathen Satanism is nothing compared to the perfect Satanism of Satan and his demons. In their eternal kingdom, without time, without end, with no limits to cunning and wickedness, where they rejoice in being detrimental to God and men, and to be harmful is their very life, and their only cruel painful enjoyment, they have attained with cursed perfection the fusion of their spirits in one will to be harmful. Now if, as you state, to insinuate doubt about my power, Satan is the body men will
crowd